history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are indeed heroes around us. They might be around the corner, down the street, or even right next door. But we'll never know unless we take a little time to ask some questions and listen as these heroes share. The idea is to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so the rest of us never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom, that freedom we so easily take for granted. And as we take these trips back in time, we're not only educated, we're entertained, and often we're inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Show's going to be a little bit different today, but I think it's timely. America is in search of things that unite us, that bring people from different walks of life together behind a common cause. Over the years, I've seen that honoring our veterans is something we can all agree on, and that sure was demonstrated powerfully in Las Vegas in recent months. As an aside, this radio program is just about to mark its 10th anniversary on the air, but it grew out of a series I had started on local television news. The TV news business gets more than its fair share of criticism. But today we're going to hear the other side of that coin, an example of how delivering information to the public gives the American people an opportunity to respond. And the reaction to what happened to one proud Navy World War II veteran in Las Vegas is something that I think is pretty heartwarming, and it's pretty encouraging. Before we sit down to hear some of New Jersey native William Barclay's experiences during World War II, let's hear some of the initial TV report from ABC affiliate KTNV in Las Vegas on February 15th, 2017.
A 92-year-old veteran is heartbroken after three of his American flags and a U.S. Navy flag are burned to ashes. 13 Action News reporter Gina Lazara talked with him tonight about why the crime cuts so deep. She's live now in front of his home near Nellis in Wyoming. Gina.
Steve, two of those American flags flew on each side of William's car. You can see where the arsonist set fire right here. Those other two flags, his American flag and his Navy flag, flew on that flagpole in his yard.
Here's my ship, and here's when I was 18.
William Barclay is 92 years old, but when he was 18, he was a U.S. Navy signalman.
I commissioned it. And I decommissioned it.
That means during World War II, he was responsible for receiving, encoding, and decoding messages sent via the American flag on this ship.
The flag used to be right in the back here.
William is very proud of his time that he spent serving for our country.
I handled the flag the whole 2 years I was there.
So he can't wrap his head around what happened last night.
Well, they meant a lot to me.
William walked outside this morning to let his dog out.
See? Just like this.
Only to find his Navy flag burnt to ashes and his American flag left in shreds.
I picked the flag up like this. I said, what the heck's wrong? What happened to my flag?
Police told William a group of people went around setting multiple fires in the area last night, and he happened to be one of the victims.
All I went through, and then somebody goes and burns my flag. I hope they catch him.
As of this airing, 6 months after the crime, those perpetrators have not been caught. But they really aren't the story anymore. The outpouring of support that ensued after that TV report aired has been a blessing that overwhelmingly dwarfs the anger and disappointment Mr. Barclay felt in the moment. Again, we're going to hear from this 92-year-old veteran himself in a few minutes. But to put it all in context, let's talk to the reporter you heard in that piece, Gina Lazara of KTNV in Las Vegas. Gina, thanks so much for joining us. I know you're real busy, so I appreciate you taking this time. And I'm curious, when you first heard about this, and I know what TV newsrooms are like, there are all kinds of calls that come in, some really serious and some completely off the wall. But when Mr. Barclay's daughter called to tell you guys what had happened to her father and to his flags, what was your first reaction?
We didn't really understand what a big deal it was at the time. It was kind of like,
you know, my dad had his flags burned, and there were American flags and Navy flags. We didn't realize what a character he was and his history, and that he's a World War II veteran. He clearly did not deserve this at all. He's the last person you would want this to happen to. So, you know, when we got the story tip into the newsroom, we didn't realize how big this was going to be. We actually had no idea. So I feel so lucky that I was the chosen one that got to go interview Mr. Barkley and get to know him and actually go back out there multiple times.
Well, and I guess you had to keep going back out there to update the story, because the real story became how people responded, not just your local viewers in Las Vegas, but once it went viral online, people all over the country and even all over the world.
I don't think anyone in my newsroom could have predicted how big the response was going to be. I don't know if we've ever seen a response this big to a story. Instantly, as soon as that story aired and as soon as it was put on the website and on Facebook, for at least 2 weeks straight, at least we had hundreds of calls, Facebook messages, emails, so many people asking how can they help. Some people just flat out asking for his address because they were going to go ahead and mail him, you know, American flag and Navy flag. And I mean, we got tons of requests of people that wanted to help him, people from all over the country that wanted to fly him to Washington, D.C. and honor him and completely spoil him. And oh, my gosh, one of his favorite gifts was someone made a wooden flag for him. He's always says, I've never seen a wooden flag before. Check this out. It's hand painted. It was hand done just for me. He's so appreciative and enthusiastic about every single gift that he gets. I mean, he gets tears in his eyes talking about it in every update story that we do. He's so grateful. I always think to myself, and I always say it, that he literally was the best person for this to happen to, because he's so genuine, he's so real, he's so sweet. And he truly, every single flag that comes in, he keeps track. Like every time someone offers to paint his house, to give him new landscaping, to lay down some fake sod, he is so thankful every single time. He honestly gets tears in his eyes every time someone offers something to him or brings him something. He has such a sharp, great memory for being 92 years old. Every person that comes in, it's not like, oh, it's just another flag. He actually hears them out. And he listens to them and he hears their backstory of why they decided to come and do what they did for him. He was the best person for this to happen to, because he loves talking about his time in the Navy. He didn't even get to graduate high school. And he was, you know, he was excited to go serve for our country. And even though it was so long ago and it was such a short period of time, it was such a crazy time in his life and such a impactful time in his life that it still does. I mean, he clearly thinks about it for hours each and every day, even though he's 92 years old. So every gesture and everything everyone does for him means so much to him. And I know he is probably going to bed at night the happiest 92-year-old in the world.
And you mentioned painting his house, landscaping his yard. He had a whole state-of-the-art security system installed. Home Depot even gave him lights to light up the flag so they could fly at night. That list goes on and on. And I have some photos up at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page that can put a picture to some of these words you're hearing on the radio. And like you said, Gina, you were there documenting a lot of that as it was happening. What did you learn from this steady stream of people stepping up to help and really turning what was a sour situation into something so heartwarming?
Absolutely. You know, something so terrible and so careless. And I'm still so angry that these, you know, kids or whoever they were not caught, because I think that they deserve to be caught and, you know, something needs to happen to them. But I'm sure that they see what I'm sure that they have seen what's happened. I'm sure they've seen the reaction from the community and from the country, actually. So I'm sure they're very nervous about what they did and getting caught someday. But, you know, like I was saying, something so bad and so flat out mean, and then something so amazing to come out of it. I mean, I know that these people that are dropping items off at Williams and shipping things to him, you know, no one's getting into, are you a Republican? Are you a Democrat? Where do you stand? None of that matters, because they saw something bad happen and they are trying to turn it into a good situation. And honestly, the people all over the country have done that. They have turned something so bad into something so good.
And I've seen his notebook with this handwritten list he's keeping of everything he's been given and who it's all from. But is there one specific gesture or one moment throughout this process that made the most lasting impression on you?
So there was this one woman whose son actually died
while serving for our country. She stopped over and she gave William a flag and wrote a letter with it so that he could understand who this came from in the backstory, and knowing that, you know, this woman's young son passed away. And he read the letter aloud on camera, and he could not even make it through. He was just crying and taken aback by what this lady wrote and why she would choose him to give something so meaningful to him. And he, I know I said it in the beginning, but he seriously took each and every gift to him to heart. You know, he didn't just say, oh, this one's just another flag. He remembers every time someone gave something to him, and he remembers the connection. And it was, I mean, I think that every time I went there, I've probably been there 5 times. I've definitely cried every single time I visited William.
We're talking to Gina Lazara of KTNV, ABC 13 in Las Vegas. We appreciate your time, Gina. And one more thing, not to put you on the spot or anything, but I'm interested in the impact that covering this story has had on you. Has it changed your perspective or taught you anything?
Sure. I mean, some people probably don't realize that being a news reporter has perks like this. We do more than cover murders and fatal accidents and the divide in our country. We get to meet amazing people like 92-year-old William Barkley, and he will be with me forever. He'll be with me the rest of my life, and you know, I hope to be a part of his the rest of his life. And this is honestly one of the biggest perks of my job, is that I get to meet people like William, and I get to essentially be a part of how his world has changed since this incident.
It definitely has changed, and it's so uplifting and encouraging to see. Thanks for telling that story in Las Vegas and for sharing your perspective on it here on Hometown Heroes for all our listeners on all our stations. That's Gina Lazara. I have some of her reporting on this linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com and on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, along with photos of Mr. Barkley and a few of the gifts he's received since becoming the victim of this vandalism. When we come back, we're going to talk to him about all of this, but also what we do every week on this program, take you back in time. And we'll hear what Mr. Barkley did as a teenage sailor aboard the USS Stockdale, a destroyer escort that guided convoys across the treacherous Atlantic Ocean to North Africa and to Europe in 1944 and 1945. We're even going to hear about one incident in which a German dive bomber was headed straight at him, only to turn away at the last moment and crash into the sea. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly 250,000 EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 800 veterans have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328.
This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and the story of 92-year-old Bill Barkley of Las Vegas, Nevada, a Navy veteran of World War II who became a cause celeb earlier this year after vandals brazenly burned the American and Navy flags he had on poles in his yard, as well as the flags he flew on each side of his car. If you'd like to see some of the TV reports on this story, I have them linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, where you'll also find photos of Mr. Barkley and the seemingly unending stream of heartfelt gifts he's received since this all happened in February. We're going to come back around to what all of these events of 2017 have meant to him. But before that, I want you to hear about his experiences on a destroyer escort in the Atlantic Ocean in World War II. That was a new class of ship that helped the Allies all but eliminate, eventually, the German U-boat threat. Bill saw U-boats firsthand, and we're going to hear about encounters he had not just with submarines, but with enemy aircraft as well in the Atlantic, as his ship helped escort convoys first to North Africa and then to England and the European continent in 1944 and 1945. Destroyer escorts had relatively small crews, 8 officers and roughly 200 enlisted men. But before we get into your time on the USS Stockdale, Bill, let's go back to your early years.
All right.
Growing up in New Jersey, did you have a big family?
I had 9 brothers and 1 sister.
Woo! Where do you fit into that?
I had a younger brother. That was me. Then my next brother is 3 years older than me. Then the other on up.
So how many of you were in the war?
I got 2 brothers in the Army, but they didn't do nothing. One of them had something wrong with his leg, but he's still in the Army. He went in himself. They let him in, but they can't send yours. Then I got 1 son who retired from the Army. He had 20 years, and he married his wife 29 years in the Army.
Wow.
So.
But when you're growing up in Trenton, New Jersey, you're one of 11 children.
Yeah.
Going through the Great Depression.
Yeah.
What was that life like? What do you remember about those years?
Well, I got drafted. I went to school in the morning, and the next day I'm in the Navy.
What about before all that? Did you?
I just went to high school.
But even before high school? Like, so during the 1930s when the Great Depression is.
Well, we didn't do nothing. In other words, whenever we ate, my father was a baker for 40 years, and what we did, like, we'll have meatloaf Monday, then Wednesday we'll have another meatloaf because we can't afford it. Bread, he was a baker. We never had to pay for bread or anything. But anyway, then we're all sitting at the table. And then if one of my brothers says, we have meatloaf again, Mom, and she'll go over her back of her hand and knock him right off the chair. She did that to me 2 or 3 times. But then she'll, my mother liked to play bingo. And she used to go to bingo every night. So while she's at the bingo, if she knocked me off the chair for saying that, she said, you don't get no dinner, right? As soon as she left, my father would go and bring him out and feed him. And then when my mother comes home, 11 o'clock at night, she'll say, Dad, let Bill eat. And then she'll holler at my father. He wouldn't say nothing. He never hit us. He never said a bad word to us. My mother was mean. She was mean to us. You know?
Well, she was outnumbered.
Yeah.
11 kids is a lot.
Yeah.
Do you remember, though, as a boy, did you have some thoughts, hey, when I grow up, I want to do this and this and
this? Nope. I didn't have time. Everything went so fast. You know, when you go to, you're going to high school, you don't think about nothing. And then I hear it's bad enough. I went to school like September the 8th. It's what, 3 months later, I'm overseas in the Navy.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you call that? How many people does that?
Not very many, but that's because of the timing of the whole thing, huh? They needed bodies, and they needed them now.
We was losing a war. Yeah. If it wasn't for Normandy, we'd be under the Germans right now. I tell people that, and they laugh at me.
Well, and this was a real ever-present threat at the time, and you knew this. But even before that, a couple years before, I'm wondering what you remember about December 7th, 1941, when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor.
I heard it on radio.
You did?
I was 16. I was sitting there, and we had them old table ones, you know. And I said, where's Hawaii at? I didn't know where that was until I went there. I went to Honolulu.
Sure. Do you remember if that even made sense to you? Could you even understand what had happened?
I wasn't afraid. I was only 16. When you're 16 in the 40s, you don't remember. You don't think of anything like this. All you think is day to day. I'm going to school in the morning. I'm coming home at night. But look at me. I went to school on the 8th, and 3 months later, I'm spending Christmas in England and Scotland a week later.
So you get drafted in September of 43.
Right.
They rush you through training. They give you a brand new ship, the USS Destroyer Stockdale.
Destroyer Escort. See, there are 3-inch 50 guns. Destroyers have 5-inch guns.
So what were your duties aboard that ship?
Well, I was a seaman at first. In other words, we hit different ports. They used to throw lines, you know, on the dock, and they tie us up. I could tell you about this one day.
All right.
All right. We're coming in there in England. So the boat's mate, first class, says, Bill, how about you throwing the line today? That's a good. So here's the dock here, and there's a big picture frame. They had an old building, a big frame. So I got it, and I threw it, and went over that and broke the whole glass. And the skipper said, who the hell's a seaman who threw that line? And so I got 30 days extra work.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's the first time, and so I never did it before. I said, God, I wanted to show impression, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I went through, that's the exact words. Who the hell is that seaman? He said, I wanted his name. So next morning I had a captain's mate. say when you do something wrong, you go for the captain.
Yeah.
And then at the end, he laughed. So the English guy wanted to know who's going to pay for my glass. Skipper said, we'll pay for it. And we never did. After once we got out, we never did. That's the first time I threw a line, I broke the window. A lot of times when we hit port, I used to go with the boatswain every time. He was on the ship two years with me. Uh-huh. Every time we went to play, I went with him.
Were you, I mean, you're a teenager, but you're in a life and death situation. You talk about a wolf pack of submarines that's hitting members of your convoy.
Right. I was afraid, but I wasn't scared. I was scared, but I wasn't afraid of shooting at them. You know what I mean? There's two different things.
Yeah.
You could be afraid in your mind. See, I'm afraid I'm going to sink our ship, but I was scared. And actually, 18 years old, just 3 months ago, I'm in high school.
Yeah.
I mean, what's in my mind? Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, that's a lot. To you, probably don't mean much.
So when those submarines were hitting your convoy, did you see some of the other ships getting hit? Did you witness that?
Well, only one.
Yeah?
Only one. See, there's five destroyer escorts. That was the most we had. We had 3-inch 50 guns.
Right.
They have a 6-inch gun. So what happened? All right, here's a sub here. It's surface, right?
All right.
We're here. All right, they can sink us, right? But we can't sink them because we got 3-inch 50 guns. They could sit there with 6-inch and we got 3-inch 50 and only go so far.
Right.
So they know that.
So they have the range to hit you range.
That's why, I did that 3 times we went across. But the other times we was doing better.
Mm-hmm.
See, that was in 43. We was the flagship. You're 399 the flagship, that's us. We mm-hmm. give the orders, you know. All right, 399 is 400, 401, 402, 403. So one time we lost 403. He went out and the submarine sank him.
So this is one of the same kind of ships in your convoy gets sunk by a submarine.
Yeah.
Could have been you.
I know it.
Yeah, that gets your attention, I bet.
I'm scared, afraid.
Did you ever have days where you thought, hey, this might be it for me?
Every time. When I saw, if you see a surface sub out there.
Yeah.
Well, see, this one time, they used to call me Eyes of the Navy, because when I seen them, I made third-class signalmen. I go up in a bridge, single lights, and wave the flags, you know?
Uh-huh.
We had a second class and a first class. So a skipper like me, every time he was sending a message, he said, Bill, you send a message. The second class, third class, when I go below decks, try to do everything to get me in trouble, because they liked me first.
They resented the fact that he liked you.
Yeah. All right, uh-huh. Here's what happens. We went out there one time, and the skipper says, I don't see nothing. You know, so I put on, I said, there's something on the water, Captain. He said, there ain't nothing on the water. So he got the first class. He said, what do you see out there? He said, I don't see nothing. I saw a surface submarine. And
wow.
The skipper looked through the glass, and he said, there's nothing out there, Bill. I said, there is something, Captain. That's why he called me. That's why every time we go on out, you know, with a convoy, you see the head ship, like flagship, they don't go out. We send other people
right.
out.
Yeah. You know?
So one day, they sent us. I had a captain. Boy, he was gung-ho, man. He sees any subs or he likes that. I mean, he don't like it, but I mean.
He's ready for action.
He said, I want action, you know. So anyway, it was a surface sub out there. So that saved the convoy because we wired for planes. Planes come and whatever's there. I saw, here's the water, I guess, and that was out there. We didn't get too close. Nobody's seen it but me. And the planes came, they dropped bomb, man. Whatever there blew up.
So what you're saying, though, is you looked through the glass and you saw a submarine. Nobody else saw it, not your captain, not your rivals.
See, I didn't know. All I saw was something on the water. I don't know it was a sub. I don't know what it was.
But because
but I
you
seen
guys,
something.
You saw something no one else saw.
So the skipper notified planes and they sunk the hell out of it.
Right. And if you hadn't seen it, it might have sunk you.
I know it.
Yeah. So that earned a lot of trust. Your captain had a lot of trust in you after that.
And the other, first class, second class, they didn't like it. They
uh-huh.
said, we're first class, and he just made third class. And they used to go below decks and do all kinds of things. They'll say, Phil did it.
They blame you for
everything.
I never told
the captain about it because I was afraid to tell him, you know.
Yeah.
So I got so mad, I told him. He said, how long has this been going on? That's a couple months. So he called him, had a captain's mask. He said, if I find out one thing that had the bill and you guys did it, he said, you'll be off this ship tomorrow.
Wow.
That's the kind of guy he is. See, when you go to general quarters, if you have 69 men, everybody has a duty.
Yep.
Say they did something, I told the captain. Next day, he'll have a captain mask, but next time we hit port, they'll have two of their first, second class signalmen, took them off. and bought two new ones.
Uh-huh.
See, the captain always said, you've been on a ship for 18 months now. And he said, we're treated like brother. And he called everybody by name. See, when you're on a big ship, you had to salute an officer walks by. Oh, there's about 100 officers on a big ship. Every time you walk by, if you're sitting on the deck, or you're off duty, you have to stand, get up and salute them. Mm-hmm. But on my ship, you don't have to salute the officer, never.
Huh.
So, in other words, the officer say, how you doing? He'll walk by, I'll talk to them. How you doing today, Bill? You know, they all knew our names. We didn't call them by names. We just said, sir, but we don't have to salute. You know
what was your captain's name?
Luther, Captain Luther.
And when you talk about being a signalman and sending messages to other ships, how did you do that? What was the method you used to communicate ship to ship?
If you see lights blinking, then you get on there and find out.
Morse code by lights.
Morse code, but I forgot all that right now. You know that? Well, 73 years ago.
Yeah. What about the flags? What did you do with the flags?
Just wave.
So you're sending semaphore messages through flags.
But flags if you're close by.
When general quarters sounded, where did you have to go? What was your duty station then?
I had a 3-inch 50 gun on a signal bridge.
Uh-huh.
3-inch 50. It's like a submarine gun. And that old bullets flying all around the deck on bulkheads, you know.
How often did you have to fire those?
Well, I got one star in major battle, and that's when I don't know if I hit something or what. It's in the North Atlantic.
What happened? What do you remember?
All I remember, they're Ju-88 dive bombers. That's what they were.
Uh-huh.
And they used to come in, boy, and drop them things left and right. We didn't get hit, but a lot of ships got hit.
So these German dive bombers are heading for your ship, and you're on this anti-aircraft gun trying to time it up to hit them on one of their passes?
No, that's all I can do. Other guys were on 20 millimeter, 40 millimeters, 3-inch 50 guns.
Yeah.
I was just praying it didn't hit the ship, that's all. But they had the advantage, Joe. See, they were called Ju-88 dive bombers.
Yeah.
See, they come in, drop the bomb, and go. One time, I was up there, and a German bomber is on the right side, starboard side. I'm here on the bridge, like this, and as he was coming in, the guy's on the guns on the right side, starboard side. They shot him down. As he come, he was heading towards the ship, and all of a sudden, rather than hitting the ship, he couldn't hit the ship. He knew he was dying, you know. So he was this close for me to see, and I saw what he looked like. He was that close. And what he did, he turned the ship and went in the water and blew up.
Wow.
So, in other words, I saw his face. I tried to tell people that. They said, you're crazy. How can you get that close? I said, don't tell me what I didn't see. See, he looked at me and smiled. I tell people that. I even told the captain. They laughed. They think it's a joke. They said, how can he get that? Because when he came in, he could have crashed right where I am. I'm here, and he came in, as he did. Instead of, I said, oh, that's the end right now. I didn't have time to think. He could have hit me and blew the ship up. But what he did, he came in, he gave me a smile, and he turned and went in the water and blew up.
Wow.
See? He figured, I'm dying. Why kill all these Americans? You know what I mean? Any other German, he don't care. He'd do it. In other words, if the Germans knew he did that he didn't hit that, and he was alive, and they found out, they'd kill him.
So he was heading straight for you.
Yeah.
And had he not turned, he would have killed you and killed a lot more.
He blew up the ship.
Yeah.
But what he did, see, the guns on the right, as he was coming in, they shot him. He knew. I didn't see him until the last minute.
Yeah.
But that's when I got that one star for a major battle. I guess that's the one he won, because I didn't have any more like that.
So you made eye contact with him.
But nobody believes it. I even talked to my daughter's boyfriend was in the Air Force. I tell him that. He said, how'd they get that close? I said, I don't know. You know, I was only 18 years old. How do I know?
Yeah.
I mean, I was scared and all like that. And you know, a lot of times when I go to bed, I lay in the bed. And first thing I do, I picture him on the airplane smiling at me.
You keep seeing that over and over again.
I mean, it doesn't bother me. But in other words, like I'm talking about now, but I can go to bed tonight, you know, and think, Jesus, I see that guy smiling at me. But if you tell people that, if I told a psychiatrist, he'll think I'm nuts. I mean, I've seen it for real, but nobody believes me.
Well, and so many people who experience these flashbacks, it's a negative thing. It's a thing they don't want to see again.
But I do. How come?
Well, because it saved your life, right? That's a positive memory to think how your life was spared in that moment, right?
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about that? What if he didn't turn?
Well, see, when you're in action like that, you ain't got time to think. You know, I'm talking to him now. Oh, yes. Oh, it's easy. He just missed me. But you had to be there to see it. I mean, I didn't have time to think. A lot of times when Marines are going on the land and Japs are coming in and they're close and they kill them, they don't think about it. Either they kill them or they kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Just like this here.
Well, I imagine that definitely gets your attention, and you can't take anything for granted after something like that happens.
You tell people that, you're crazy. He'll say, yeah, Bill. But deep inside, he'll say, that don't never happen. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm interested in what else happened, because you spent the better part of 2 years going back and forth, making these journeys. Were there some other moments where you look back on now and you say, boy, that was pretty close? That was a close call?
Yeah, but every time I went on a ship, Al, I was, everything's a close. You know, when you're 18 years old, I mean, you're gung-ho. Like, if I had to go through it now, 92, I'd be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm even afraid to go on out in a ship in the, out in the ocean. If I take a cruise, I'm afraid. Like, one time I went to New York, and my wife went, and we went on a ferry boat, you know, to Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
The thing started to take water. And you know, I, and my wife looked at me and said, you're all white, Bill. What's the matter? I said, look, and the water was coming on the ferry boat this high.
Uh-huh. Like a foot
I
deep.
Kept, yeah. I kept thinking, I said, all I went through, I'm going to get killed on a ferry boat. I went through a lot of stuff, but I got more worried now than I did when I was out in the sea.
I don't think anybody blames you after hearing some of what you went through out there. And I know it wasn't just the enemy threat, but the weather conditions in the North Atlantic, too, at times. We're going to explore that when we come back. We'll also, of course, get into the most recent development, what started as an absolute nightmare for this 92-year-old Navy veteran when the flags he flew daily were burnt to a crisp, only to unleash an outpouring of support that still hasn't come to a halt yet. Check out the photos and videos at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this. You hear a lot about World War II if you listen to Hometown Heroes, but have you ever wondered what it's like to be on a real World War II ship? The SS Jeremiah O'Brien, one of just two remaining operable Liberty ships, is docked at Pier 45 in San Francisco's famous Fisherman's Wharf. And the O'Brien is offering overnight programs on Fridays and Saturdays for kids ages 6 and up. Kids get to sleep on the ship in World War II bunks, have a private tour of the ship's galley, the crew quarters, guns and gun mounts, exhibits, and the crown jewel, the O'Brien's triple expansion steam engine. This is an experience like no other. For more details, call the SS Jeremiah O'Brien's office at 415-544-0100. That's 415-544-0100. Or visit the ship's website at ssjeremiahobrien.org.
Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and the unique story of 92-year-old Bill Barkley of Las Vegas, Nevada, originally from Trenton, New Jersey. Of 11 children in his family, he was the only one to end up in the Navy during World War II. And just like his story has a recent twist with the incredible worldwide response to what some thoughtless vandals did to his flag, Bill's ship has a 21st century epilogue as well. I told you that he served on the destroyer escort USS Stockdale, but I didn't tell you who that ship was named for. Lewis Stephen Stockdale of Anaconda, Montana, was a 27-year-old ensign aboard the battleship USS Oklahoma on December 7, 1941. Stockdale became one of 429 members of the Oklahoma's crew to die as a result of that surprise attack on Pearl Harbor. 2 years later, with our guest today, Bill Barkley, there as part of the original crew, the USS Stockdale was christened with the fallen sailor's mother and grandmother in attendance. But just last year, 2016, forensic technology allowed military researchers to identify the remains of five men who had been buried in Hawaii as unknowns after Pearl Harbor. Among those five was Ensign Lewis Stockdale. Interestingly enough, one of the gifts Bill Barkley has received in recent months is a flag that had flown as the flag of the unknown sailor, a distinction that, until last year's identification of Lewis Stockdale, represented the very man Bill's ship was named for. As for Bill's 2 years on the Stockdale, I don't want to leave anything out. We heard him vividly describe the close call he survived on April 17, 1944, when his convoy was attacked by German planes near Algeria. But let's hear the rest of his adventures on that destroyer escort now.
Besides people shooting at you and planes dropping bombs in the area and submarines surfacing, I bet you ran into some weather that wasn't exactly easy.
North Atlantic, let me tell you, you have hammocks, three hammocks. The top man, there's white things. Mm-hmm. They're hot. They're hot. Okay, you're this far from it. The middle one, if you get a fat guy, his belly's touching your stomach.
Uh-huh.
And the one on the bottom, that's the best one. Unless he's fat, he's going to get squashed too. So let me tell you. So one day, I had to be on watch. I was the middle guy, right?
Yeah.
So here's what happened. We went up in the air, and we looked. We was 100 feet up in the air, right? And as you look down, you see a big hole. And when you go up like this, you come down like this. As you come down, if you're leaving your hammock, the ship goes like this, it goes like this. It's the whole ship, you can hear it shaking like a little crack.
That's how big the swells were.
100 feet and the hole. In other words, we got lost. We was lost at sea for 3 days. They sent a message to my mother that I was lost at sea. If we couldn't navigate the ship, we couldn't control it. We did that for 3 days.
And you were the only ship there?
Yeah, only ship there.
What had happened to separate you from the others?
One of the ships in the convoy got lost,
yeah.
So we went out to get it. I said, what else should we go out there? We ain't got no protection. No nothing, you know? But captain, you had to take orders. So when I went on duty, you know, it happened a lot. It don't happen once. When you're in North Atlantic, every day you got a big storm. It's never smooth, never.
Mm-hmm.
Not like Pacific's nice. So anyway, I was on watch, and look, I go up like this here, and I look down and said, Skipper, man, that's a big hole. He's yes, about 100 feet. Then I'm in my sack, you know, and it feels like your ship's cracking.
Right.
And that to do that all 24 hours, boy.
Just over and over again.
Because I'm scared. I said, we can't do nothing about it because we have no control of the ship. 3 days, and then I found out afterwards that we lost at sea. The skipper told us afterwards.
Yeah.
He got on a speaker. He said, we was lost at sea. And right away, I people lost at sea. That means they got in the water and drowned, you know?
Yeah.
I said, how we lost at sea? We're still alive, you know? But we had no communication. In other words, when the Navy knows where your ship is 24 hours a day, you know that.
Right.
But we didn't have no way to contact. If they try to contact, they said 3 days, we contacted the destroyer escort, and they must have got lost at sea. They must have just drowned.
Uh-huh. What did you appreciate the most about the guys you served with?
Well, we never had a problem with it. We had a problem with one officer, though. We had a problem with one officer, though. See, whenever you lose an officer for some reason, you can't go without that same kind of position. If he's a navigator or something, you have to go to the next port, and there's a guy waiting the same rating as that officer,
right.
And he comes aboard. You can't, if you got a guy on a 20-millimeter, a gunner, there's a Trojan, works your feet, Trojan operator,
yeah.
And the guy puts the 360 rounds in while you're shooting. Say they come in, and they shot the guy who loads my gun, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then the Trojan operator has to get on and do that. If I was a gunner then you have to regulate your gun yourself. But the other way, he regulates your feet and all.
Right.
So this one guy, I never forget, his name was Reed. My other five officers were all good. I told you they treat you like, the skipper says you treat like brothers. So anyway, he come aboard. The first night, I have watch. When I have watch, if I don't have a cigarette, I have it with the gunners in the gunner tour. There's five guys in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting there, so the skipper never knew it. Four guys would sleep, and the other guy be awake. So from the deck, the skipper, the lieutenant on the deck, he'll say, how you doing down there, gun two? Oh, okay. You know, and we ain't supposed to sleep. You can get killed in court-martial, you know?
Sure.
So one day, he called, and he said, how come you don't answer me right away? You know, real strict officer, you know? I said, officers don't talk like that to us, you know? So this one guy was on a battleship. He was on an aircraft carrier. He had about 16 years. Of course, he's got about 20 ribbons. His name was Ski. So he was on watch me one day, and about a week later, he said, I'm coming down here to find out you guys better not be sleeping. There's a court martial. He's telling us, reading the book, what they happened on. So Ski got on, he was on the phone. So he said, give me that phone, Bill. I was on the phone. And he said, hello, this is Ski Exampsy talking. He said, Lieutenant Reed, if you come down this gun turret, I'm going to throw you to the sharks. That's what he said to him on the, you know, you can get court-martialed talking that way. So he had a captain's mask. And then the skipper, he has a smart guy, you know, and he likes, if you're in action, he wants you to be good and all like that, you know. Anyway, he didn't do nothing to him. And after he said, if we're off duty with skipper, he said, we're sitting there. And when he gets by, he says, you're supposed to stand up and stand at attention and salute me. He said, how long has he been doing that? He said, for about a month. He said, he told you had to salute him? I said, yeah. The next port, we landed, be standing by the gangplank, and he had a suitcase and all. He salutes the flag, salutes the officer on watch. And I said, what happened? Then we found out that skipper got rid of him. Imagine that. So we got a new guy, and boy, he was really good.
There's not that many guys who served in Europe and in the Pacific, especially in the Navy. You did both. You made trips
Atlantic,
to Europe and in the Pacific.
And up in the Pacific, yeah.
What are you most proud of when it comes to your time in the Navy? When you think back on it now, what do you look at and say, you know, I'm really proud that I did this or I was a part of this?
I know in Atlantic, when we took convoy to over England, like that, well, coming back, big hospital ship, they had all wounded, about 2,000 veterans, and some of them were whacking their head and all. I got pictures of it. This Marine and the waves were real big. He jumped over in the water. So they wired our ship and said, man overboard. So I got my, I seen him in the water.
And you looked through binoculars and saw where he was.
I saw him in the water. But see, in the water, it's like it, and the waves were going like this, covering it like, you know what I mean? You, 1 minute you see something, next minute you don't.
Sure.
So I threw the life preserver to him. I said, he's not catching it. So he's going to drown. He has no chance. So one of our guys says, hell, I'm going in after him. He dove right in and got him out.
Wow.
He dove in. I got a picture of him in the water with the life preserver on him. This guy dove right in. I said, why'd you do that? He said, the guy's dying. He didn't know he was a wounded Marine. Then we found out that he was, you know.
Sure, he wanted to end it. Yeah. He was thinking these injuries are too
much
to bear.
Well, he didn't know. I bet he didn't know. I bet he didn't know he jumped in the water. I asked a psychiatrist one day. He says, half the time they do stuff, they don't know they're doing it. In other words, when he jumped in, he didn't know he was doing it.
So you got a firsthand taste of the physical and psychological wounds of war. You ended up getting to the Japanese island of Honshu just in time for the signing of the surrender documents in September 1945. You stayed in the Navy till 1946. And I'm going to fast forward about 65 years. You're living here in Las Vegas. Your son puts up a flagpole in your yard. And ever since then, you've been flying the Stars and Stripes every day, as well as the Navy flag.
And nobody ever had them. So when we went out that morning, the Navy flag was burnt to ashes, and you saw the picture of America. So I called Channel. My neighbor said, call Channel 13. And when I called in, they said, boy, you're glad you did.
So they not only burned the flags on your flagpole, you have smaller flags that are attached to the top of your car. And
they burned those, too. And they burned top of the roof.
And you walked outside, and you saw all that.
Yeah.
And how did you feel?
Oh, man. See, first thing I thought about on the ship, I was putting the flag up on our ship and all.
So when you were in the Navy, one of the things you had to do was raise the flag.
Yeah, now and then, yeah.
Uh-huh. So you've got this flag now in front of your house 70 years after World War II. Vandals come and they torch it, but it gets on the TV news here. And I imagine you didn't know what to expect. You didn't know if anyone was going to do anything about it or not, right?
And they were here every day for 14 days, every day.
Well, and as you look back now, one of the worst things that happened to you has turned into one of the best things because of
the
response.
That's what everybody tells me, but I don't, you know.
So tell us some of the things that have happened since that local TV station put out the word about these vandals burning your flag. What have people done for you since then?
They've painted my house.
Uh-huh.
And two of the painters painted a flag out there. Nobody, you can't touch that flag.
So where you park, there's a brick wall, and it's painted with an American flag, and it also says that you were in the Navy from 1943 to 46.
Yeah.
And not only did they paint that on there in large, visible from the street fashion, they covered it with an anti-graffiti film so no one can mess it up.
You can you can paint it. You can put anything on it. All you do, Bill, if you want to, call us, and we'll come and wipe it off. But I said, just get a clean rag, look, and go like this. I'll come right off.
And they replaced your flags?
The submarine gave me flags. That's good news there.
Well, there's two flagpoles on top of your artificial turf out there in the yard now.
One of them is the flag, and underneath is the Navy flag. And the other one is a submarine flag.
An active U.S. submarine sent you.
It's a nuclear. Nuclear action submarine.
So they hear about it. They send you the flag from their ship. You got a Navy flag and an American flag that flew over the U.S. Capitol earlier this year. But who put those flagpoles up for you?
Combat Veterans Motorcycle Association. They help all veterans. In other words, like mine, they found out and they come around and see, what can I do for you? They put the flags up. They had the ceremony. You know, 20 of them came with their motorcycles and put the, all morning they put them in there. And we had them all around there.
Yeah. And what about those flags on your car?
I got 18 of them more. Look, see up top there?
Yeah, you've got plenty of backups ready to
go. And I got 75 flags there.
So in the corner over here, there are 75 flags.
People.
Now, you had one American flag that got burned.
Yeah.
And now you've got 75 of them over there. Where'd they come from?
Neighbors and different states. Hawaii, all different states there.
People all over the country heard about this.
Yeah, and they sent flags. Most of them, people brought them here. Mm-hmm. Like this lady two blocks from me, let me tell you, she came over 11:30 at night. She said, Mr. Barkley, she said, my boyfriend got killed in Vietnam, and I had this flag. It's 10 by 20. Listen to this.
Ooh.
She said, will you put this flag up?
Well, and you also have a flag that was flown in Afghanistan that was sent you.
It's a combat plane. What's it say up there? A combat?
Flag was flown on a combat reconnaissance mission.
And the captain sent it to me, two of them. He sent me two of them.
So a reconnaissance plane flew this flag. You've got two flags that flew there in Afghanistan. And we could keep going down the list. You've got a framed letter there with a photo.
Her son, yeah.
Well, and when they burned the flags on your car, they burned the top of your car, right?
Yeah, just a little bit. But still, you have to take care of it.
Well, yeah, and you would have to pay a lot of money to get that fixed.
Yeah, the car dealer did it for nothing.
He did it for nothing, and he even gave you a new car to drive while he fixed it.
Yeah. And they didn't charge me nothing. I met the owner and all. He said, anytime you want to do it, if you want to buy another car, I'll help you out. But my sons gave me this for Christmas.
What about Home Depot? What'd they do for you?
Home Depot? See all that, where the flowers are? That used to be dirt all the way in my yard. Every year, $100 I pay, put stuff down, never grew. So what they did, they put them red bricks there.
Yeah.
And over there. And then they went to a florist. And the florist said, what are you going to do with these flowers? They said, we're going to put them for me. And they said, no charge. Take what you want. Then she went to another florist, and they had found out of it. He told her, he said, what are you going to do with these? And Home Depot guy said, if we're going to put them there. He said, no charge. So all them flags for them, and them red bricks out here, they put for me because they know I sit out there at night. Them trees and all, the florist gave us that.
Mm-hmm.
And they put that brown stuff all around. And then the grass, artificial grass, Lowe's did that.
For free.
Free.
Maybe we shouldn't say free, but in return for his service to our country all those years ago, and in response to the symbolism of this proud veteran's flags being burned, that careless act of hatred or disregard has now been completely drowned out by a continuing stream of love and generosity. The dozens of flags we talked about, I don't think we even mentioned that the very next day, a crew from nearby Nellis Air Force Base was there with a brand new flag. The help he received with his car, his yard, his house, a new state-of-the-art security system to keep track of all of it. Isn't it something to see people in Las Vegas and all over the country stand up and prove that this is one thing people from all different backgrounds really can't agree with? You mess with a World War II veteran like Bill Barkley, you mess with all of us. Check out those photos and videos at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. Thanks again to Gina Lazara from KTNV in Las Vegas for sharing her perspective. And thank you for spending this hour with us. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you can join us again next time when we again meet a proud veteran of World War II with a unique story to tell. And we're reminded once again that freedom is not free. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there, the that did survive. And then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that honor flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they go into your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. Gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.